The following is an interview by Patrick Huber with Ken Capes at the Warren Drug Store in downtown Mebane, North Carolina, on November 28, 1994. The following interview is being conducted for the Southern Oral History Program and is part of its Oral History of the White Furniture Company project. So I thought that we might start out the interview today, Ken, by having you tell us where and when you were born and a little bit about what your folks did and if you had any brothers and sisters.
Yeah, my name is Ken Capes. I was born in Burlington, around the Burlington Mill Village in 1941. Had a couple of older brothers. Everybody in my family has at one time worked for Mill or for the Burlington Mill. Grew up there, went to school in Burlington. Went to Carroll, went to UNC and got a BS degree in pharmacy. It worked my first 3 years in Mebane. Moved up the road to Hall River and worked 20 years and moved back to Mebane, been here another 12 years. Pretty familiar just more or less with this particular area. The parents that moved to Burlington because of the mill there, and raised pretty close.
Did you work in the mill as a teenager before you went to UNC?
Worked in the mill while I was at UNC. They were good enough to give me a job. First two summers after I was out of high school, worked in the chemical lab there, and really enjoyed it, as a matter of fact, but just didn't really feel like that was the place for me for the rest of my life.
When did you say that you first came? What year did you first come to Mebane?
Came to Mebane in 1964. We moved, we'd been married probably 6 months or so, and I had been working at my apprenticeship out in Graham. I got through my apprenticeship, and I worked there for those guys for about 6 months maybe, and then came to Carolina Drug in here in Mebane. Worked for Mr. Jim White, who was sort of a landmark here himself. He started a drugstore in 1933, and it just the fact that the store itself just closed down this year. Mm-hmm. But came and got my feet wet there, and like I said, moved back up the road to Hall River, but we kept our Mebane ties by staying in the Mebane Church. We joined the First Baptist Church when we came to Mebane, and rather than switching churches, we lived more or less halfway in between Hall River and Mebane anyhow. So we sort of kept our bond with Mebane, mm-hmm. while we were up there.
And then when did you return to Mebane for the second time? I've
been here this makes 12 years. 82, I guess.
In 82. Mm-hmm. To start out, generally, do you have any impressions of the White Furniture Company when you came to town?
Yeah, well, it was kind of sort of almost familiar to me, in that a lot of the same principles or the way they did things at White's were the way they had done things in the cotton mills, in the mills there that we grew up in. In if a parent worked there and his kid got old enough to work, wasn't much question about where he was going to work. Mm-hmm. He was going to work. If his daddy worked at White's, the daddy would go talk to Mr. White, and pretty soon the son worked at White's. And it was much the same way in Burlington Mill. You know, you had families that had maybe as many as five members of the same family working in the mill there when Mom and Dad worked there. And I saw the same thing down here. Basically, it was men and their sons, rather than the daughters and mothers like it was in a mill setup. But I saw that, and it sort of always amazed me that you could almost tell when they come in the drugstore where they work, because chances are they were missing a finger here or there, you know. And those same guys, though, that had accidents and lost limbs or lost fingers, would still, as soon as that boy was 16, talk to Mr. White about getting him a job. And like I said, there's just a lot of similarity between, and I guess this goes back to what a community is built around, and for what I understand or for what I can see, basically Mebane was built around White Furniture Company, just like the portion of Burlington I grew up in was built around Piedmont Heights or Burlington Mills in that area. It was it's probably more of the way times were, than anything else. Not much mode of transportation. You lived close to where you worked, so you could work, mm-hmm. And that I saw a lot of that, as far as with White's here, is maybe that's how it started out, and it just got to be a loyalty type thing. It appeared to be, and of course, Mr. White was good to the people. I mean, he was not aloof in that he didn't mingle. I mean, he could come through the plant, and probably call names. I don't know, but I always liked the gentleman. He seemed like just regular folk,
Mm-hmm. He would come in here occasionally to the drugstore.
Oh yeah, well when he has been in here, but in the later, he's not as well now as he once was. Mm-hmm. Doesn't get out as much as he wants to, but he used to when I was working in the beginning at Carolina Drug. He was in there, regularly. I don't know, maybe because he owned the building, because now he did. He owned basically downtown. But like I said, he'd come in his overshoes and his coveralls. He'd been out messing with some horses or whatever. He was just, like I said, he was regular folk. That sort of impressed me about him. Of course, the mill itself, the furniture plant itself was a dynasty is not the word, but it passed from generation to generation, he seemed to fit in with what I knew about the rest of them. And of course, was that way up until they sold the plant. Yeah, of course, his health was going down there.
What kind of reputation did the White family have among, just in town?
Well, as far as I know, they were well liked. Mr. White. See, when I came, the patriarch or the head man of the organization was Mr. Steve White. Mm-hmm. His dad had died, who preceded him, whatever, they lived here in town. They mingled here in town. They went to church here in town. His wife was a sweet woman as ever had been. I mean, and she took joy in helping him. I mean, I couldn't say that bad about him.
Mm-hmm. What were the other large employers in Mebane?
Well, basically, when I came to town, Whites was the big employer.
Uh-huh.
You had Craftique, which was probably almost comparable in size. You had Melville Furniture, which was across the tracks. It was a little smaller, but furniture was the thing. You know, mm-hmm. there weren't that many textile processes going on. You had Sutherland Mill down here, which is, shucks, I don't even know who they are now. They were bought by Adams Millis and sold out there, Brown Wooten now. But thinking back, them, Dixie Yarn, and a little Hosier Mill over here on 119 North were the only things I can recall right off. But like I said, furniture was the main thing.
Do you have any idea how many people worked at White's?
I really don't. I really don't. There was a lot of folks come out of that building, come quitting. but as far as numbers, I really don't know.
What was it like around quitting time in the whistle blew? Can you describe that?
Well, the streets would be, you know, they didn't tarry. You know, like some folks like their work so well that they'll hang around and you know, get everything. When the whistle blew, it was time to leave, you know. And I can get a picture of Friday's quitting time and payday. And every debit insurance man in Alamance County was down there waiting for when they come out of that building so they make sure they get that premium paid. I think that's one picture I get of quitting time. And then you'd have, just like you do today, of course there's not that many places for them to hang out. Some of the local that hang around and panhandle or whatever,
mm-hmm.
when they get off work and got their money, you know, they're feeling prosperous at that minute. But, it was sort of a bustling place then. I mean, ever how many employees they had, it looked like the place was full when they had been full when they came out.
You said that a lot of the workers would come into the store.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they would. We had a back years when I worked at Carolina in 64, 65, that time frame. Now, we had a big lunch counter, and when the lunch break would occur, man, you know, you'd be deluged. And, of course, even as recent as 5-6 years ago, maybe 6-8 years ago, we were the last of the hang-ons as far as a lunch counter in a drugstore, you know, and the mm-hmm. other drugstores had taken theirs out and whatever. So we would have, of course, lunch hour. We'd have an extra girl to come in just to handle that, and basically it was all Whites. Of course, it'd be the same ones every day, basically. The girls would, a lot of them would have their stuff ready, you know, when they got here because they knew what they were going to have. But, of course, that shortly before they closed down, they put a commissary of sorts in the mill down there, in the plant, and that cut. Cut out. We didn't have to have any extra help. We still had some of the regulars that came up. But yeah, they were when lunch hour would come, it would be like scattering. I mean, yeah, they were. You could see them going everywhere, heading to Bird's or the deli or into the one of the stores. Used to have a little. Well, they do now where this deli is up the street. And there was a little sandwich shop in there. Some years ago, and it was, just seemed like probably the most of them ate like that rather than brown bagging like I was used to.
Did you know a lot of the workers by name?
I did then, yeah. Mm-hmm. Probably would have to scratch my head to recall them, but yeah, you know, it's like anywhere else. I mean, there's I don't guess people are different maybe wherever you go, but yet they're a lot the same. You know, they have their peculiarities, either the way they look or the way they talk or whatever, and you learn them. You know, and we still have some of those guys, some of the unique guys. They'll stop by every now and again. You don't remember me, do you? Yeah, you're one I couldn't forget. You know? but they still stop in once in a while just to let you know that they were one of Whites. You know, you remember me when I worked at Whites? You do. But some characters. You know, you have characters everywhere you go, and that's Whites was no exception.
Do you remember any in particular, without naming names, that some of the things that struck you about the people?
No.
any joke tellers or?
Well, yeah, all that went on as far as is picking out an individual that did more of it than another one. I can't recall that.
But they would come in and they'd talk to you, huh?
Oh, yeah. You'd come in myself, I try to mingle because I'd rather work right here dipping ice cream than I end up there any day. It's more fun when you get down there. But I try to make my way up, or into the crowd, sometimes help the girls at the lunch counter or whatever. We basically all knew each other and knew who we were and one another.
Did the workers ever talk about their work when they came in here? There are things that happened on the job with you?
Well, nothing more than, just the usual stuff. Had one incident down there that back in June of 1966, when my wife was at the county hospital trying to deliver, and one of the guys, one of the regulars that had come in, he had let a piece of lumber slip. And it caught him on the side of the head and just ripped him open, you know. So there's only one doctor at that particular time on duty over there where we were. And he was up there with my wife trying to find a kid. And he sat over there and bled and sat over there and bled and sat over there and bled. He called my wife. They called over and asked him, says, we've got an emergency down here. He can't handle one emergency at a time. Got one over here. So he wound up going around to one of the other doctors and getting it stitched up. But I do recall that. But as far as pulling out anything else that was yours at this right this minute, I can't think. But this guy never has forgotten. Okay. He still comes by.
Uh-huh. How were the workers at White's generally regarded by the rest of the townspeople? I know that in mill villages they were stigmatized, the workers.
Yeah, probably the same way. Yeah, it's probably the same way. Making difference where you go or what position you take or whatever. We tend to segregate ourselves, maybe look up or look down, but we tend to segregate ourselves. I think it wasn't any different here. The folks that worked at White's basically associated with the people that worked at White's or furniture workers or whatever, didn't try to hobnob but probably the salt of the earth. I mean, they're probably mm-hmm. the best folks around. Mm-hmm. And of course, like I said, growing up in a mill village, you find that's the way it is. You know, you got one group that looks down on mill workers or laborers, we'll say, and then you got another group that don't work at all, you know, that sort of look up to them, you know. So I think, basically that's the way it was down there. Because they probably were not in the minority, mm-hmm. they probably didn't feel much of a stigma about mm-hmm. about being a furniture mill worker or furniture plant worker.
Did you see any, or can you think of any specific examples of that sort of a stigma being attached to them? Were they called lumped together, called a certain name?
No. Only thing that I do recall a white gentleman, he had retired. It was their Christmas party, retirement party, all up together, I think. And he had been down there all his life, ever since he was just a kid, probably young. Probably went to work before he was legally able to work. It was the only job he'd ever had. And he said, "You know what?" says, "I never, this never been in a situation like that in my life." Says, "You know," said, "he called me up there, Mr. White called me up there in front of that whole crowd and told him how long I'd been there." And you get the feeling that was a real source of pride to be singled out by somebody like Mr. White. But I remember that. But as far being categorized or called different names or different things, I really don't. Maybe it was because I had a deaf ear to that because I'd grown up with it, you know. I find that today that I'm probably prouder of coming up in a time and in a situation in a community like I came up in than if I had come up with something. I had a lady come in here a month or so ago, and she's getting her address, and she gave me her address, and it was a Mill Hill address. I said, "Well, Lord have mercy." I said, "I know exactly where you live." She says, "How do you know where I live?" But I said, "Well, I'm one of the original Mill Hill kids, and I'll just be fair with you. I'm proud of you." And we got to talking. I feel like probably that's probably the same way these folks feel now. A lot of them that have gone through that and either retired or had to retire because it closed down. I know there were guys that worked over there that took extreme pride in what they did. I had a guy come by and says, it just worries me to death. Says they've stepped up production.
Kid, did you have anything for Jason Troutman?
Said they've stepped up production, and they're moving that furniture by me. I can't do my kind of job on it. Can't spray it like it ought to be sprayed because it's going too fast. And so you get the feeling that really they took a pride in what they did. They wanted it done right, whether it's going to get paid the same thing for it or not. Another guy that worked on the saws over there says, in order to do it right, you got to take your time to do it right. And talking about the speeding up the processes. It's just I'm sure there were those there that didn't care, you know. They were there to make it to Friday. And there were those there that wouldn't have worked for nothing, but they enjoyed what they did and they wanted it done right. And I think that says something about a fellow making a difference. What he does, if he's doing it to please himself as well as to get it on down the line. And you know, I'd fiddle around with a little furniture refinish myself, and it's a good feeling. Mm-hmm. You know, when you get that thing down to work, you know, man, this is something nice. You know, and you can't do it by just slapping something on there and sending it on. It just it takes time, and it takes practice, and it takes work. And I think that by and large, they probably had a group of people down there at one time that they cared what the stuff was. And of course, you can look in the old catalogs or whatever, and when White was the name in furniture, they were getting enough money for it that they didn't have to ship it out in, you know, boxcar loads. They did it right. They knew it was sold when it was through, when they had it finished, because it wasn't going to be anybody else that made a better piece of furniture than that. And of course, that's got to give a fellow a little feeling of you know, making him feel good about himself. But it seemed not to be to me, seemed not to be the same once the White family was out of it.
It sounds as if, from your comments, that you had some idea of what the new company was trying to do with production, talking to the workers.
Yeah. I think that, well, you know, I don't know anything about furniture business or much about any kind of business, but I felt like they bought it to sell it. I didn't really think they bought it to be a furniture manufacturer in Mebane. They bought it to sell it, cut down on competition, whatever. And when they took it over, we're talking laying off a 35-year saw guy that's worked that saw. It's the same saw, man, for years and years and years and years. And they lay him off and hire a guy that's never touched a saw to take his place. Now, somewhere down the line, something's got to take a back seat. I mean, you're not going to have quality that you would have had with an inexperienced person doing the work. You know what? And that's some of the things, some of the stuff that I saw, the speeding up to the conveyor to get that stuff, not just get it made, but get it made and get it out. You know, and you can't sand that thing right without enough time. You can't spray it right. You can't clean it right. I think that they came in, they made the most of the White name, and probably saw the White name diminish some while they were doing that.
Did a lot of workers that you spoke to also think that they had just bought it to sell it?
Well, you know, I think it took a lot of them by surprise, because you know, White's been here since 1891,
yeah.
Who in the world's going to sell White's? I mean, you know, that's like selling First Baptist Church. You just can't do it, you know. And I think that it took a lot of them by surprise, and a lot of them really didn't know anything about Hickory furniture, Hickory chair, whatever. And I don't know that the most of them had any thoughts as to what, other than, am I going to have a job? Mm-hmm. Are they going to replace me? You know, and they did replace a lot of me's. But once they got in and some of the things inside began to change, I'm sure that may have gone through some of them's mind, you know. And there were a lot that, when the layoffs began, got out on their own hunting something before the, you know, before it got to them. But as far as why they bought it, maybe they bought it to turn it or to keep it what it was, maybe just put a little more production to it. I don't know. Like I said, I don't know anything about furniture building. I just know that you can hardly expect the same quality to come out of anything, whether you're making a chair, whether you're dyeing cloth, or if you're working in a drugstore, you can't do as good a job with inexperienced people as you can with experienced people. And usually the more experienced, the better, you know. And they just went through that, the change of the older personnel down there, which I thought was not right. But then again, they owned the company. I didn't.
Do you remember how you first heard that the company was going to close?
You mean the when it was
yeah, when
the shutting down?
Whites, they were shutting down.
What was it? Probably one of the workers in the was an office or maybe just sort of leaked out from somebody to somebody to us, you know. I don't remember directly anybody coming in and saying, you know, Whites is going to close now, whatever. But I know that the community sort of got a hint of it before it ever happened, whether it was some of these Democrat leaks or not. Uh-huh. But it still, until it did it, until it closed down, I didn't think it was going to do it. I thought maybe it was that they had a buyer or whatever, but yeah.
Even after they had announced it, you didn't believe it
until I kind of felt like it, you know, something was going to happen. But it didn't, and I guess as far as furniture goes, that place is out forever. Yeah, because it's still an ideal place for that type of operation.
How did the plants closing down affect the downtown area?
Well, you know, the downtown has been sort of fading for years and years. The advent of shopping centers in the 60s sort of killed maybe as far as downtown businesses goes. But anytime you take 100, 200 employees away from two blocks away from your door, you're going to hurt. I mean, there's no question about it. No way you cannot hurt from it. It affected our overall business, so, and I'm sure it did everybody else in town.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason you got so many empty storefronts now. You know? So when I came to Mebane in '64, there wasn't an empty storefront in Mebane. Every place had a, you know, had a business in it. You had department stores, and you had the auto store, auto parts stores, even more than you got a couple, three hardware stores, you know. When even before that plant closed, we were seeing the demise of that, and it just added to it. I mean, don't know that Mebane would be a vibrant town downtown if Whites had still kept going, but it would have been better than what it is now. Yeah.
How do you think, in a larger sense, the closing affected the town of Mebane?
Well, you know, probably through the families within there. You know, you had families that were rooted in the furniture plant that had to be uprooted, you know, and move away or change their whole. You had some that were able to go to Craftique, But by and large, I expect the most of them didn't. They had to find other kind of work, and a lot of them had never done any other kind of work. You know, it's when a man is 50 years old and he's worked in a furniture plant for 30 years, and it closes down, and you got nothing around but hosier mills, that type of thing. Most folks don't want to learn you, teach you how to do something in the hosier mill if you're 50 years old and it's going to take you a couple of years to get to your max, you know. And they'd rather have a younger person. So a lot of them had to move out or move away to find a job that or a place that somebody wouldn't that they could work. And I'm sure that some of them moved probably toward the Greensboro High Point area to where there were furniture factories, whatever, still going. But I think by and large, as far as how it affected the town or the area through here, probably was more in that vein, in the vein that it was it affected the families and within the families more so than it did business or whatever. And of course, when you lose families, it does affect your community somewhat. But the changeover from the White family to the Hickory family was almost as devastating as the closing itself. In that some of the real older folks that had been there forever were gone at that time, you know, and new blood brought in, and maybe not traditional type. So when they closed, I guess what I'm saying is, a lot of the new folks that came in, they weren't furniture folks to begin with. Mm-hmm. They were people that needed a job at the time and were hired. And when the factory closed there, then furniture wasn't all that in embedded. You know, they could go out and do something else, and most of them were younger, you know. So I think probably it affected that transition group as much as it did in the end when they closed it down.
At about the time that they closed the plant, Mebane was up to get the Mercedes-Benz plant. Do you know anything about that?
Well, do I know anything about? I know that Mebane was in line from Mercedes plant. I don't think that the closing of the plant had anything to do with them not coming. I don't think in fact, the only reason that it didn't come here was because it was bought. I mean, you know, and the people never will get it paid for. And personally, I'm glad it didn't come here because I thought we were offering too much.
Yeah.
But as far as the two things relate, I don't see any relation between the two. Would have had a good workforce selection, but they're going to have a good workforce selection wherever they go, mm-hmm. you know, because they're going to pay higher than furniture factory wages or mill worker wages. But I don't think there was any connection as far as the plant not coming here and this plant closing down. I always felt like that years ago that Mr. White sort of, he owned a lot of real estate. And he sort of could control who was here and who wasn't here, you know, In that sense, he had a workforce here that if you were going to work for somebody else, you're going to have to get out of town to do it, more or less. But I have an idea that you know, in that era, that that's probably the way it was in a lot of places. Like say, where I come from over there, the mill owned the village. I can remember my daddy buying the house we lived in, $500. The mill owned the property the church was on, and was more than generous to the church, because the church kept them sober and able to work, and kept them pretty well content as a neighborhood or a community. And I feel like maybe the whites, they were somewhat philanthropic, or whatever the word is, that they, you know, with scholarships to the schools and one thing and another, they weren't like the corporation, you know. They had a sense of person about them, you know. The whole group, not just the whites, but the people that had run it. The upper, the management portion of it, that were folks that were part of the family or had been there forever. You know? And like I say, I think they had the plant itself, the people that were in charge, and the supervisory, from the top on down through the supervisor, probably had a sense of community about them.
Mm-hmm.
And probably was sort of promoted by Mr. White, you know, to keep them happy, keep them working. And that's not a bad philosophy in this day and time. You know, it makes a difference what kind of business you're in. If you got unhappy workers, you're going to have below standard quality work, and you're going to have people that are looking to go somewhere else. And I think that he must have had that.
What was the general impression of the Hickory Company when they came in?
Well, I don't know that anybody really took a special liking to them. Mm-hmm. You know, they were impersonal. You know, it's I met the guy that was the plant manager once or twice. You know, he wasn't a part of the community. You know, he was in and out, and he was there to do what they had sent him there to do, you know, get this thing moving. And I don't know that as far as fitting in the community or whatever, if the hierarchy of that company ever could have or would have.
Mm-hmm.
As far as his personality or whatever, they're just... I guess it probably would have been different if the place had been bought, and maybe some of the people that were already there had been left to run it. Might have could have made a go of it as far as that goes, but it really, as far as the people that came in to do it. Really not much of a personality there as far as a company personality. When they came in and some of the first layoffs occur, you know, it was like you could see the employees or whatever, more or less walking on eggshells, and you know, didn't really know what they were going to do. That doesn't give you a very favorable impression of management, at least it doesn't me. And I think maybe it was less than maybe upfront about some of the stuff.
When you said plant manager, you meant Robin Hurt?
I guess that's his name. I really don't know, but the gentleman that came in to take it over, I was never in his company more than a couple times.
Mm-hmm.
you know, and like with the other guys, you know, they were, like I said, they were in and out. You know, it's just, of course, they were familiar with the community. They lived here, and this guy, I think, as far as I know, he never moved down here. I don't know. But a lot of people who would move from a larger community into an area like Mebane would probably scratch their head and say, why'd I ever do that, you know, because, but I wouldn't, you know, I'm just the other way around.
When you say that you think that the company was less than upfront about some things, what exactly do you mean?
Well, yeah, I'm talking about when they came in and they knew that they were going to let these people go. And no question, I mean, when they came here, they were going to cut costs, raise profits. You cut costs is you get rid of some of the people that are, you know, that have worked their way up to maybe $2 or $3 over minimum wage, you know, and hire somebody for minimum wage. I think they knew they were going to do that when they got here, and I think that. Like I said, I think it was, if they ever intended to make a go of it, that was probably their downfall. You know, let them guys go and do what they've been doing for years. The whites had never suffered any as far as selling their goods.